specialist at the University of Nebraska. He and his team have been working to identify the genes that give tepary beans drought and heat tolerance, as well as disease resistance. And they're working to breed these traits into common beans.
Now we are able to move genes from the tepary beans to the common beans.
His team has created new varieties that are being field tested in drought-prone regions, such as Nebraska, California, Puerto Rico, Uganda, and Tanzania. He says these new varieties have the potential to help feed people who rely on beans as a critical food source, and where food scarcity is a growing concern as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
Hallelujah! 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 Hallelujah!
Hello and welcome. This is Reverend Billy at the Church of Stop Shopping in New York. There's a feeling in the air that the revolution that really must happen for our survival is simply out of the question. Survival is so impossible, no one can even think about it or imagine it. What? Humans gathering in cafes? We're not talking about surviving. Lovers sighing in beds? Not whispering about it. Big stars shouting from stages? No. Our songs are not about lowering carbon emissions. The idea is not out of the question. The question itself is illegal. We are silenced. The words are not there to ask for life. The words do not become sound. And when there's no sound, there's no listener. If I walk out of my house up the street with my family, my partner, and our child, there is in the air between the buildings, up in the trees, down on the pavement, a feeling of this great absence. We might talk about the weather if the smoke from 1,000 out-of-control Canadian fires is so thick you can't breathe or see. But the emergencies don't arouse us. We get over that, and we go back to silence. Don't we believe what is real? Can we please talk about the weather? Can we talk about how we have turned the weather into a killing machine? Now, you and I, right here on the radio, we're talking, we're listening. Can we do something before we lapse into that passive silence? Before we start shopping again? I'm talking to you. I hear you. You're talking to me. This is our chance. In this half hour of the Stop Shopping Church, I want to address the question of revolution through love of the earth. Revolutions. What are they anyway? Let's bring them back. Let's bring back their heroes and their songs. Will somebody give me an earth-a-luya?
Earth-a-luya.
Abandoned. Well, everywhere is war. We've always thought of our heroes as having to do with death and war. And, you know, when we think of Joseph Campbell and the whole idea of the heroic journey, it's rarely a journey that's about love. It's about, you know, deeds that have to do with conquering, domination, what have you. And so part of what I wanted to say to people is that living as we do in a culture of domination, to truly choose to love is heroic. To work at love, to really let yourself, you know, understand the art of loving.
All American psychoanalysts say that the social revolutionary as a type is immature and is fighting out infantile problems. Now, you are trained as a psychoanalyst and you are a social revolutionary. Would you care to comment on this view of American?
I don't think we have to look
no hay que ser tan rebuscado en la apreciación de los hechos.
We need not be so detailed in the appreciation of facts.
Los revolucionarios no son gente normal.
The revolutionary people are not normal people.
Eso se lo puedo asegurar.
That I can assure you.
Pero, en definitiva, lo importante es que la capacidad de construcción y de sacrificio.
But in the long run, the important thing is that the capacity for sacrifice
construcción
and construction
se va desarrollando.
Be developed.
El revolucionario hace la revolución.
The revolutionary makes the revolution.
Pero la revolución hace el revolucionario.
But the revolution makes the revolutionary. And there is an interrelationship, a constant interrelationship.
Donde el revolucionario va alcanzando grados más altos.
Where the revolutionary achieves a higher level of conscience.
¿Por qué empezó? Se lo podemos dejar a los psicoanalistas.
Why did he start? We can leave that to the psychoanalysts.
Pero el hecho final.
But the final fact
es un resultado de la lucha.
Is a result of the struggle
y de la acción de las masas sobre el propio revolucionario.
And of the actions of the masses on the revolutionary.
Yeah. again, y'all.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Listen to me.
Hello, welcome to News from the Natural World. I'm Savitri D. Exposure to glyphosate, a widely used herbicide, caused brain inflammation and accelerated Alzheimer's-like symptoms in mice, even at low doses, raising concerns about its impact on human brain health. Glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, is commonly found in food, water, and over 80% of U.S. urine samples. Glyphosate is the most widely used herbicide in the world. A study by researchers at the University of California, Davis, found that feeding grazing beef cattle a seaweed supplement in pellet form reduced their methane emissions by almost 40% without affecting their health or weight. This is the first study to test seaweed on grazing beef cattle in the world. It follows previous studies that showed seaweed cut methane emissions 82% in feedlot cattle and over 50% in dairy cows. Livestock accounts for 14.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions, with the largest portion coming from methane that cattle release when they burp. Grazing cattle also produce more methane than feedlot cattle or dairy cows because they eat more fiber from grass. In the U.S., there are 9 million dairy cows and over 64 million beef cattle. The first summer on record that melts practically all of the Arctic sea ice, an ominous milestone for the planet, could occur as early as 2027. For the first time, an international research team has used computer models to predict when the first ice-free day could occur in the northernmost ocean. An ice-free Arctic could significantly impact the ecosystem and Earth's climate by changing weather patterns. As the climate warms from increasing greenhouse gas emissions, sea ice in the Arctic has disappeared at an unprecedented speed of more than 12% each decade. The scientists projected the first ice-free Arctic day using output from over 300 computer simulations. They found that most models predicted that the first ice-free day could happen within 9 to 20 years after 2023, regardless of how humans alter their greenhouse gas emissions. The earliest ice-free day in the Arctic Ocean could occur within 3 years. An area of land nearly a third larger than India has turned from humid conditions to dry land, arid areas where agriculture is difficult in the past three decades. Dry lands now make up 40% of all land on Earth, excluding Antarctica. Three quarters of the world's land suffered drier conditions in the past 30 years, which is likely to be permanent, according to the study by the UN Science Policy Interface, a body of scientists convened by the United Nations. Many recent studies assume that elderly people are at particular risk of dying from extreme heat as the planet warms. A new study of mortality in Mexico turns this assumption on its head. It shows that 75% of heat-related deaths are occurring among people under 35, a large percentage of them ages 18 to 35, or the very group that one might expect to be most resistant to heat. It's a surprise. These are physiologically the most robust people in the population, said study co-author Jeffrey Schrader of the Center for Environmental Economics and Policy. Several factors may be at work. Young adults are more likely to be engaged in outdoor labor, including farming and construction, and thus more exposed to dehydration and heat stroke. The same goes for indoor manufacturing in spaces that lack air conditioning. These are the more junior people, low on the totem pole, who probably do the lion's share of hard work with inflexible work arrangements, says Schrader. Young adults are also more likely to participate in strenuous outdoor sports. A previous separate analysis by Mexican researchers showed that death certificates of working-age men were more likely to list extreme weather as a cause than those of other groups. The vulnerability of infants and small children came as somewhat less of a surprise. It is already known that their bodies absorb heat quickly, and their ability to sweat and therefore cool off is not fully developed. Their immune systems are also still developing, which can make them prey to ailments that become more common with humid heat, including vector-borne and diarrheal diseases. Globalization of the Earth contributes to the introduction of many animal and plant species into new parts of the world. Invasive species can displace native species through competition, or they transmit new diseases. At the same time, some of these non-native species are threatened with extinction in their native range. This creates a conservation paradox, because the question now is, should non-native populations of species that are endangered in their native range be protected or combated? A total of 230 non-native mammal species have been introduced into new areas by humans and have settled there permanently. Scientists were able to show that 36 of the non-native mammal species are threatened in their original homeland and thus fall under this conservation paradox. Scientist Mark Urban has analyzed 485 papers that involve the study of a species and its ability to survive changes to its environment. He then compared this data with estimates of future warming and determined what sort of changes might occur and in which areas. He then made estimates about the likely survivability of a given species based on where it lives and its ability to migrate or to adapt. He found that if global temperatures rise approximately 5.4 degrees Celsius by the end of this century, the worst case scenario, it would likely lead to the extinction of approximately one-third of all species alive today. He notes that some cases of chain reaction extinctions could occur, in which a small animal goes extinct and then a larger animal that feeds on it consequently goes extinct. He also notes that some species groups or types are at much higher risk than others, especially amphibians. Every year, billions of vehicles worldwide shed an estimated 6 million tons of tire fragments. These tiny flakes of plastic, generated by the wear and tear of normal driving, eventually accumulate in the soil, in rivers and lakes, and even in our food. Researchers in South China recently found tire-derived chemicals in most human urine samples. These tire particles are a significant but often overlooked contributor to microplastic pollution. They account for 28% of microplastics entering the environment globally. Glaciers have historically determined the boundary between Italy and Switzerland in the Alps. Now their melting has led the two countries to redraw a small section of their border over the past year and revived concerns of how climate change might impact mountain communities around the world in the coming years. Glaciers form the borders of many countries, ranging from those in the Andes that separate Chile from Argentina to the Sachin Glacier, which marks the northern point of the line of control in the disputed Kashmir region between India and Pakistan. Glaciers in the Alps define the borders between Italy and a number of countries, including Switzerland and Austria. Exposure to car exhaust from leaded gas during childhood altered the balance of mental health in the U.S. population, making generations of Americans more depressed, anxious, and inattentive or hyperactive, according to researchers. They estimate that 151 million cases of psychiatric disorder over the past 75 years have resulted from American children's exposure to lead. Leaded gas for cars was banned in the U.S. in 1996. But researchers say that anyone before then, and especially during the peak of its use in the 1960s and 1970s, had concerningly high lead exposures as children. Leaded gas for cars was banned in the U.S. in 1996, but the researchers say that anyone born before then, and especially during the peak of its use in the 60s and 70s, is at risk. And now, the sounds of extinction. The eldest known wild bird on Earth has laid an egg. A Laysan albatross has laid an egg at the age of 74. Known as Wisdom, the bird is one of millions of the huge seabirds that return to Midway Atoll near Hawaii every year to nest. Wildlife experts say for decades she was doing this with the same partner. Albatross are known to be monogamous and has laid over 50 eggs in her lifetime. Laysan albatrosses can have a wingspan of up to 80 inches and travel upward of 930 miles to forage for food. And hear the sound of the Laysan albatross.
Well, we live in interesting times, but they're deadly times. We live in revolutionary times. You heard Che Guevara say that the revolution makes the revolutionary. And the times that we live in will make us. And the times are ruled, on the one hand, by criminals who are getting away with it, who are normalized, who are protected by laws, by courts and police, by saturation advertising, lawyers and marketers. And they are putting toxins into the air, the water, and the soil on a constant basis. And they're killing us and making it impossible to have children and grandchildren. So that is the world we live in right now. And we do not have a way forward that we understand to be possible. We just had the three international conferences. One was in Colombia for biodiversity, the other one was in Azerbaijan, and that was about reparations to the global south for the destruction that came from the corporate temperate north, you and me. And then, of course, there's the plastics treaty in Korea. All three failures. These conferences were ambushed by the infantry of corporations. The litigators, the propagandists, the obstructionists, the people defending the climate change, defending the heat waves, defending the superstorms, defending the viruses, defending the mass mortality that we're suffering. Civil wars in 36 countries must have something to do with it, am I right? And 100 million people walking somewhere towards some dream beyond some militarized border that they hope will open up for them and their families. And we're watching our tax money bomb children before our very faces. Here we just stare at them. What do we do? What do we do? Go out on the streets and shout? You might get identified as the wrong kind of person. Suddenly you're on a list. We're going right into the nightmare. And today on our 29 minutes, you just heard the famous voices. We had a series of people who really made a difference, who were revolutionaries for good. But the revolution that created those revolutionaries is different than the one that we face. But I think it helps us. It helps us to feel their presence, to know that's what they did. It was a gift of their lives. Some of them died very young. Some of them were in prison for a long time. We don't know what will happen to us, but let's dedicate ourselves to the earth. Let's love the earth. And what we do as a result of that love, let's just go forward. Let's help each other. Make communities, make friendships that are strong. Love the earth. Somebody give me an earthaloo, yeah. Earthaloo, yeah. Earthaloo, yeah.